Okay, back in the motel. Monday night, March 15th, the date of this interview with Red Faber. I'm staying in the Hillside Motel here on the far east end of Chicago. It's really outside of town, just off the Chicago bypass, 294. Now, as it is obvious from this tape, this was a very difficult interview. In fact, it was hardly worth it, except to meet Red Faber and to talk to him and to talk to his wife and see the house and some of his things there. He's a very old man. He's 88 years old. He was dressed as the picture I took of himself and Mrs. Faber will show, in a bathrobe and pajamas. I guess he hardly ever dresses up because, as she said, it's just too much trouble. And he sleeps late, and sometimes, she said, he sleeps to 2 and 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But usually it's in the morning. But he's, as the end of that last, end of the tape interview part reveals, he is to bed early at night and misses the White Sox games because they're on too late for him, early as they are. Well, let's recapitulate the day's activities of Monday, March 15th. It was a rather clear, it was a clear day despite all the weather forecasts of snow, and there were again announcements tonight of snow practically all over the state, maybe a couple inches in Chicago, but I don't believe it. Today was a clear day, a lot of sunshine. I left the motel here probably around 25 after 9 this morning. Drove up to 294. I'm about a half a mile to a mile in on Roosevelt Boulevard from that. Got back on 294 and drove over. No, I didn't either. I took the first road I hit, which wasn't 294. It was just before 294, some road. It took me over through other parts of Hillside. I worked my way back onto Interstate 90, which goes right smack into the heart of Chicago. And I was on that for half an hour or so. That was some heavy driving there, heavy traffic and speeding traffic, and it was busy. And I hadn't been used to that for a while, so it was I was on my toes. No drowsiness on that part of the trip, although there has been some drowsiness in the trip up to here. This, by the way, is the result of my morning breakfast. I went over to the little restaurant across the street here, I've forgotten the name of it, the Golden West, I believe it is, and I had breakfast there. All kinds of schoolgirls there. It looks like there's a girls' high school very nearby. Mount Carmel High School might be nearby, although I don't think they're all girls there, but boy, they're all girls in that restaurant, all in their blue jeans, but rather neat. It was different from the usually crummy high school crowd. I thought it might be some girls' college, but the waitress said no, and I don't know what it is. Maybe I'll find out tomorrow. But on the way out, I'm paying my check, I asked the owner there what would be the best way to get into Red Faber's location in there in 10105 South Prospect. And I indicated, I had my map with me, and I showed him the way I planned to go, which is back 294 to about 127th Street, then in towards 57 and over on 57 to about 105th in Prospect, which is just off 57. He said, no, I'd have too many on that 127th Street, and there'd be too many stops. It was just, there was no expressway at all. So he said, go in the Eisenhower Expressway, or 90 as it's called, into just about the middle, or shortly before the middle of town, you hit the Dan Ryan Expressway south, which is 94, and 90 continued, and it also joins 94 coming south from Milwaukee. And this is the road to Indiana and south of town. But take this to about 95th Street when you veers off into 57 and take 57 over to about 105th and get off. Well, that's what I did. I got off at 101st or 97th or something, and I had to work my way around a little bit before I got to Red Faber's house. But I got there about a quarter after 10. I wasn't sure it was Red Faber's house because there are a couple of prospects in Chicago, and I wasn't sure this was the right South Prospect. So I went up to the, I parked on the street out on the on the side of the street opposite the house, and went up to the neighbor's house and knocked on the door, rang the bell, and nobody came. I think there's a beauty parlor there, and finally some kid came, wouldn't open the door, but he yelled through the door what I wanted, so I asked if the house next door was where the old ball player Faber lived. He said, yeah, it was, so I knew I was in the right place. So I went back to the car and stayed there about 10 minutes. I had said 10:30 was the time I would get there, and I knew that he slept late, and I didn't want to be too early, so I killed a few minutes just to sitting in the car. About 10:30, I went up to the house, and was let in. This was a kind of a middle-class neighborhood. It's rather nice. The homes are spaced a little bit apart. They're rather new homes, shaded yards, rather deep yards. A rather nice residential aspect, although not too far away. There are some rather run-down neighborhoods. I passed some coming in, and it's there are all whites on that street, but there were blacks in neighboring streets not too far away. But even where I passed through some black communities coming over to Faber's house, even those were well-kept-up communities. It wasn't any kind of a ghetto at all. Although, according to the chap at the restaurant this morning, he said the colored community is, he used the word threatening, this part of town where Faber lived. They're not in there yet, but they're threatening, the way he put it. I'm not quite sure what that meant. But there were a few blacks nearby, but they were very in a rather nice area. So it was kind of a nice place. The home was fairly old, probably 50 years old, but it's a rather neat one-story house, beautifully furnished. And I was met at the door by a young lady, she's probably my age, gray-haired, very good-looking and healthy and husky and full of life. And she said, I'm Mrs. Faber. Well, she must have been the one I talked to on the phone, because it sounded like her, and then I thought it'd been some housekeeper taking care of Faber. I didn't think his wife would still be around. He's 88. But this is the second Mrs. Faber, and she's probably in her late 50s or early 60s. She said she played golf 52 years, but she didn't look that old. Maybe she started in when she was 1 year old, it'd be all right, but she didn't look like she'd be 60 or 65. She was very well-groomed. She goes to the hairdresser regularly, I understand, even because she hates to leave the house now because Red Faber is so needs attention constantly. He's not helpless or feeble, but he just can't take a chance, she says. And so when she went to the hairdresser, that's when he went out to get the mail, and there's some pieces on the slipped out of the mailbox, fell on the slab there, and he tried to pick them up, fell over and hurt his ankle and his wrist, which still had a big bandage on it. That's why he couldn't write very well on the ball. I got an autographed ball, and the first autograph he wrote looks like hieroglyphics. He wrote it again, and it looks a little bit better, recognizable. So it's a very nice house, well maintained, at least the inside. The yard was fairly maintained, a few things here and there, but it was nice, and nice furniture, carpeting, and Red Faber came out into the living room to greet me in his pajamas and robe, and she introduced me to him. Then she said, let's go into the back room where he likes to sit. So we went into the back room and passed by a dining room and a bedroom and a bathroom at the back room, and he sat in the chair there, and I sat on a couch across from him, put the tape recorder on a little table in the middle, and I started firing away, probably around 10:45, as I got it set up. And I could see right away this is going to be a very difficult interview. He didn't remember much and didn't talk much. And I shot my bolt rather quickly, and his memory was bad. I mean, I asked him about the Chicago Black Sox and all the feeling that existed on the team then, you know, as these guys were throwing games and so on. He says, oh, that was a pretty good team, good spirit in that team. So I realized right away it's kind of wasn't much use for real meaty kinds of things I wanted, and I couldn't press him on these things. So I played it very loosely. Anything he could say then was welcome. I skipped over his whole record, and he didn't say much. I did most of the talking, I'm sure. If I want an interview of myself, I've probably got one on this tape. She wouldn't come over and sit with us. She sat in a chair about 10 or 12 feet behind the couch and listened in very closely and tossed in her 2 cents with. I wish she'd been right with us. I asked her to, but she didn't want to, and probably the tape recorder didn't pick it up very well. I did, at the end, get her to sit in with us the first part of this tape and fill in a few of the gaps, which she finally did. He's 88 years old. He's a nice guy. He's pleasant, friendly, and nice as could be. I just don't see, he doesn't seem like a tough competitor to me. Maybe he was, but I'm sure he was. But he was a very nice guy. I said he never got thrown out of a game and never had trouble with umpires or much, even that perfect game he lost. So he seemed like a real fine person. And I just wish I'd gotten to him earlier when we could have gotten into some of these things more fully. So it was a very disappointing interview, but at least I did talk with him. As far as pictures go, I don't know if the tape recorder might have been analyzed, taking some pictures or talking about the pictures. Mrs. Faber, apparently his first wife, died in the early 40s, and then he met second Mrs. Faber, I think she tells that, I forgot what it was, through some friends, in 43 or so, and they got married in 47, I guess. She is, I don't know, just what her antecedents were. She grew up in Chicago. I guess that would probably be her only marriage. And she's got a full-time job now taking care of him. She doesn't work. I don't know if she did work at one time. Maybe she did. But it was, she helped out at filling in some gaps and things here and there, which helped somewhat. Of course, she knew nothing about his baseball career. He was been out of baseball 10 years before she ever met him. So. Oh yeah, I was talking about these scrapbooks. Apparently, she said somebody got a hold of one of her scrapbooks and took off with them, whether he gave them away. He's the kind of a guy who wouldn't care much and let things get out. Someone like Fred Blake would, I imagine. And maybe Woody England, or not English, maybe Carmen Hill. But when she got to know him in 43 or 44, there wasn't too much left, and she salvaged what there was left and has put them in scrapbooks and has kept things going pretty well since then. So what he has now is largely due to her. She brought out this old scrapbook and a lot of pictures, which he said he hadn't ever, never seen for years, the usual thing there. And while she was out of the room, I was leaving through the scrapbook. I found a picture of a kind of a sepia, formal portrait or photograph of Faber, and I pursued baseball, very nice one. And there were two copies. One was mounted in the book, and there was a loose one. So I asked him, would you, she was gone, I asked him, would you mind if you have two of these, would I be able to have one of these? Could you autograph it? And I handed it to him, he was agreeable. And she walked back in the room about that time, and she kind of blew up. Oh, no, you can't do that. The son may want this copy, and so on. So I was kind of embarrassed about this. I had no intention of trying to do something behind her back, and I apologized profusely, and I think she forgot about it. We got along very well after that. But I did get out my camera, the 35mm camera, and we cleared off the table between us a little bit, got some outdoor light and some of the indoor light, and I took about 14 or 15 pictures of himself and a few of the old players that he had in the scrapbook. A nice big 8x10, they'd be great to have. I hope they do come out. I tried to remember everything to do with that 35mm camera. So we got some pictures there. There wasn't too much else in the scrapbook. A lot of it was post-career and old-timers conventions and things like that. So actually the scrapbook was a limit. Even much as I like scrapbooks, even if I'd gotten that one, and somehow I'd gotten it, it wouldn't have been that valuable to me. But the pictures I thought were pretty good, assuming they do come out. So I don't have any autographed picture of them at all. I have got him to autograph the ball. She gave me I didn't want him to autograph anything after I saw how he was writing, because he couldn't write. And what would be the good of having a totally distorted autograph like that? So that takes care of the kind of interview I thought it was. I'm glad I went out there. I certainly had to see him, but as far as getting any inside information, there was just almost nothing. The most critical points of his career, he had false memories or no memories. Just nothing to, just couldn't sink into it. It reminds me of what Debbie Glaston must have gone through in our oral history interview with Alan Weinstein. We didn't remember anything. A total frustration, you feel. You got so much to ask and they've got so little to tell you. There were two things I promised to look up for them. What game was it that he pitched only 67 pitches, which is the record number of minimum pitches for a game? And I promised to get that data and send it back to them. Maybe it would be, he said, maybe against Washington. Then also his near-perfect game, where he had two out in the ninth inning, and nobody had reached base, and then Jack Lapp was the hitter. He says this was against the Philadelphia Athletics, and Lapp hit a bomber to Eddie Collins who threw the first, and Lapp was safe, called safe by the umpire. And then he got the next guy out, so he pitched the 28th batter, allowed one hit. He thinks these two games might have been the same game. So I've got to check up on that and find out if this was the game, when it was, who it was against, if there were two games, get the dates on those, get Xerox box scores of those games and send them back to them. Because, I promise you that. Mrs. Faber, the president, Mrs. Faber, is quite interested in baseball. There are a number of baseball books. There's the Macmillan Second Edition Encyclopedia. There's the one of the recent Turk and Thompson encyclopedias. And there was some other book over there I saw. I've forgotten what it was. And there were a few scattered books. And she went right away to get one of the books out to check up on Wolfgang. One of the pictures I took was of a couple of the old White Sox and a guy named Wolfgang. I said I never heard of him. And she looked him up, and yes, there was some guy named Wolfgang. I thought it was referring to Mozart, maybe. It wasn't. He was a ball player. He pitched in about 4 years, and he must have been during around the time of World War I. Run around 40 or 50 games. I just couldn't. I've got my encyclopedia here. I have it. Yeah, here it is. I'm going to check on the very one she looked it up and see who this Wolfgang was. Because these are one of the pictures I took that may come out. Hope I remember who all those people are. But, and they were asking me for identifying some of the pictures. A lot of the pictures had no complete identifications on back. So they were asking me if I could help out. I don't think I helped out on any of them. No. I may have them one or two. But one thing he said was that Bill Clem was the umpire on that disputed play at first, which lost him his perfect game, of course. Clem never umpired the American League. So that's all. And yet she was saying, well, Fabe, as she calls him, remembers some things one day, and then the next day remembers something else. He doesn't remember the day before. So putting them all together, you may get the full story. And of course, I forgot to tell her that Clem couldn't possibly have been the umpire in that game because he was never in the American League. That's a kind of error that he would make without any thought, and you couldn't do much about it. So I'm going to look up those things and send them to him. Although the interview wasn't that long, really, I didn't leave the place till almost quarter of one. We talked and chatted and looked at pictures and said goodbye. She took me in into another room there and showed me his collection of autographed baseballs, some fine autograph balls. I think I took some pictures of the wall in the back recreation or study or lounge or living room in the back where we talked. He's got a lot of his trophies there, and I took a photograph of some of the trophies on the wall. And so there really wasn't that much to do there. Took a picture of the two of them together. Well, so I got out of there about quarter to one o'clock, and headed towards, I went back to 111th and over to 57, the interstate, 57, and went back into town and got off at 67th, I believe, or 66th, and then went over on that. It's Marquette Street is what it is, Marquette. And I went over to Western Avenue to Tony Pyatt's Auto Sales. And my God, what a tremendous place this is. I thought it might be one lousy little used car lot, but he's got a whole block of buildings, executive offices, used car lots, other offices, garages, tremendous complex. I went into one place there and asked him if I could see Tony Pyatt. Oh, he never comes in. He's old. He's got a pacemaker for his heart and so on. He doesn't come in very much. But why don't you go across the street to the executive offices there and talk to Georgiana, who's the secretary. Maybe she can set something up. Well, I went across. I took a couple pictures of it. I guess I did that after I came out. But I went over there and went in. Some clerk of the information didn't talk to me for about 10 minutes, maybe a wait. And I said, I'd like to see Georgiana. Says, who's calling, please? And I said, Eugene Murdoch, who are you? So we went after a while. But finally, Georgiana came out, and I explained carefully what I had in mind. And she went back for about 10 or 15 more minutes. And suddenly she came out and said, well, come on in and see if maybe we can set something up. So I went way back into the room, more corners, and went into the executive office, and there was Tony Pyatt, pacemaker and all. Fine big office there. He's got a $15 million business in that auto business. He has Datsuns and other cars. He's a millionaire. Tony Pyatt, a millionaire. Can you believe that? God. He didn't know a thing about business when he quit baseball in 1938 when he was 31. And he's developed this into a $1 million business. And himself, a multi-million dollar business. He's a multi-millionaire. Can't believe it. Well, he was very nice. He had a nice time. I must have been there about half an hour, talking generally and then setting up a meeting, which we're going to have on Wednesday, the day after tomorrow, about 11 o'clock. He said 10 o'clock. Oh, let's make it 10 o'clock. He wanted to talk to me. She said no. This Georgiana was very firm. She is his girl Friday, as he said. She's been with him for 15 years and really is his right arm, right hand girl. Could see that, so I was going to argue with Georgiana, and she said 11 o'clock. I knew it was going to be 11 o'clock. The only problem is I have a meeting with Bob Weiland at 2:30 on Wednesday, and I'm hoping they don't overlap. But if I get out of there by 1:30, maybe I ought to be able to get to Weiland. Or I'm going to be a little bit late at Weiland's because Tony Pyatt's going to be a great interview. Just talking with him that briefly, he told stories and he was interested in this. In fact, he's going to have his own tape recorder on while I'm interviewing him, so he gets a copy of this interview. And he's got it out in one of the garages, a huge garage there. He's got his own Hall of Fame. Huge oil portraits, which he has commissioned by a famous portrait painter who has done one of Everett Dirksen recently. It must be about 3x3 or 2x3 of number of the Hall of Fame. There must be about 20 of them. Simmons, Fox, Gehrig, Feller, Cobb, Speaker, Cronin, Grove, Johnson, Wagner, with they're in diamond shape with a cross ball bats behind the frame and a ball in each of the lower corners, right and left. The birth date at the top, the death date at the bottom of the diamond. They're worth, he said about $1,000 each. These things are worth. She says they're worth about $2,000. Beautiful oil portraits. All around this garage in different frames or panels. Every so often there'd be a panel. He's got his own little showcase in there with a plaque of himself and his record in bronze, his career record, every team he played for, an entire record, cast in bronze with a little bust of himself, cast in bronze, attached to that metal piece at the top. God, what a complex that is. He was very nice. This is going to be a good interview. I hope he doesn't have trouble before Wednesday, because I'm looking forward to that. He's talkative and he's friendly and he's interested. He seems to want to be interviewed. Maybe he's never been interviewed before. So I finally left there and went outdoors and took a couple of pictures of all of his facilities. I tried to take as many pictures as I could. I know I ran out of film. We got so many Tony Pyatt's this and Tony Pyatt's that on both sides of Western Avenue. Big lots, buildings, parking lots.
From there on.
Did they have a ball team at the college?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
And I played at Dubuque College.
Did you play much ball before then? Did you play in the sand lots around?
Oh, yeah. I played ball when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And then I pitched for St. George's College there in Dubuque.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then from there I went right to the...
They saw you, huh? You had a pretty good... Well, you started in 1909 with Dubuque, that's
yeah.
about it. Uh-huh. And Pittsburgh drafted you, right?
Yeah, I guess they did.
Mm-hmm.
But I never pitched an inning there. They sent me somewhere, and I forget now. I finished up with...
I went to Minneapolis.
No.
For a while.
Pueblo you were in.
Yeah. Because you went up to Pittsburgh in 1910, then back in 1911, and then you went down to a couple of teams there.
Oh, gosh, man.
A long time back, huh? Yeah, well, that's not important. You never went to Pittsburgh at all to...
No, I never pitched there or anything.
I wonder why they didn't give you a chance.
I don't know. I had a lot of chances.
Uh-huh.
Like ball games that were beating it. I got warmed up a couple of times, but they always put somebody else in.
You really were with the team then.
Oh, yeah.
But you never got into a game.
Yeah, Fred Clark was in there.
Oh, I see. Did they have pretty good pitching staff?
Well, pretty good.
Babe Adams, was he with him?
Who?
Babe Adams?
Yeah, he was there.
And,
Mammox,
or Al Mammox? I guess he may have come later.
I don't know. I kind of forget the names.
How'd you like Hans Wagner?
Oh, I knew Hans very well. I was with Pittsburgh a little while.
Yeah. Because he is really a great,
quite a ball player.
Big hands?
Yeah. Big rough looking legs and everything. But he could move around pretty
good. Yeah,
quick.
I often wonder how he could run so fast.
Oh,
when
he could run pretty good.
Yeah. And nobody questioned whether he could hit or not, huh?
Oh.
Yeah.
He could hit that ball.
Is he a pretty nice guy to know?
Yeah, he's a pretty nice fellow.
Well, what'd your dad think you're playing ball? He like it? He glad to have you
well,
play ball?
Well, he was running the hotel there in Cascade.
They
built the hotel there, and I don't know how many years they run it. Finally, he sold it. He was getting too old.
Did he ever see you pitch?
Oh, yeah.
When you were here in Chicago? Or?
Yeah, he even came to Chicago.
A big thrill, I'll bet. Did your mother like baseball?
Yeah, but she didn't know very much about it. She saw me pitch there, too.
Uh-huh. Well, you went to Des Moines for a couple, you had a couple of good years at Des Moines.
Yeah.
Did any major league team own you then when you were at Des Moines? Did Pittsburgh still own you, or had they?
I think they did.
Uh-huh.
No, they didn't let me go.
Uh-huh.
And I never even pitched an inning.
I
pitched the batters once in a while.
But they were sorry. I guess maybe you just owned by Des Moines. They probably had their own ownership and didn't have a farm system then, maybe, huh?
Yeah. I went to Des Moines after I was with Pittsburgh a while.
Yeah. Do you remember who managed the Des Moines club?
Oh, no.
He won 41 games in 2 years there.
Yeah, that's pretty good there.
Were you throwing a spitter then?
Yeah.
When did you first throw that?
Oh, in the 3-I league, Dubuque.
Uh-huh. Did you just happen to develop it, or how did it...
Oh, no, I practiced it.
Did you learn from any of the old spitters? Old spitball pitchers?
No, I didn't learn many of them. They quit letting them pitch, except in those that were using it at the time. And I think I was about the last one.
Yeah, I think so. I got a story here about that. Burley Grimes and Kovaleski. Yeah. There were a couple of those that were pitching at then. Yeah.
Kovaleski was good ball pitching.
Yeah. Did you throw every pitch a spitter?
Oh, no.
How often did you throw it?
Oh, I throw it pretty often. Uh-huh. But I could get the ball over pretty good, you know. Uh-huh. And they hit them in the dirt more than anything.
Did it drop sharply, the spitball? Or?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. I threw one sideways, you know, come in on a left-handed hitter, uh-huh. And then most of them overhanded.
Well, you'd mix them up and they wouldn't know when it was coming, huh?
No, that shouldn't count. Because I'd go to my mouth every time.
Oh, is that? I see. Uh-huh. They didn't know when it was coming. Did you put much saliva on the ball, or?
Well, I put enough on so it didn't slip off, you know.
Did you chew any tobacco or anything to
get
it?
Yeah.
Did that make a better mix on the saliva? Did it get it nice and brown and dirty?
I chewed the back on one side and gum on the other.
You can get it mixed up, I hope. Did it ever slip?
Once in a while. Mm-hmm. Not very often, though. Mm-hmm.
Did the catchers have much trouble, that spitball?
Oh, no. I had a good catcher, Shock.
Oh, yeah, you had... One of the best in the business,
he's
huh?
He's a great little catcher.
Yeah. Well, you had some great... It was a great ball club you were with, weren't you, there?
Well...
In the White Sox.
Yeah, there a couple of years I had to go in the damn Navy, you know.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. 1918, you...
Yeah.
Pitched only...
I'll pitch... Couple, two, or three games.
You were in 11 games, but you had won 5 and lost 1, it says here. So you must have gone early into the...
Well, I did go early. I put in the whole season down there.
Yeah. Where did you go?
At, that place right there near Volcano.
Great Lakes? I see it. Yeah. Okay.
I forget a lot of names, doggone it. Well, gee whiz, you don't choose them anymore, you know.
Did you know Comiskey very well?
Oh, yeah, I knew him.
How'd you like Charlie Comiskey? Was he...
He was all right, as far as I knew. I made a trip around the world with him.
Oh, is that right? The 1913-14, yeah. Did you ever have any contract disputes with Comiskey?
Huh?
Any salary disputes with Comiskey?
No, not very much.
He had a reputation of not paying his players too much.
Well, he didn't pay too much.
But you felt he always treated you pretty well?
Oh, yeah. I think 10,000 the highest they ever got there.
What year would that have been?
Oh.
About 1920 or 21?
No, I think I had a pretty good year in 17.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. I think we won the pennant that year.
Yeah.
Then 18, I pitched about 4 or 5 games, and then I had to go to the... What you call them?
Yeah. Did you ever hold out at all?
No, I don't think so.
You're very agreeable, weren't you?
Yeah, well, money at that time, you know, a guy's $10,000 is a hell of a salary.
Yeah. I guess Eddie Collins probably got as much as anybody did, didn't he? He got maybe 14 or 15. What about, did you ever meet Ben Johnson? Remember the league president?
Well, I don't know. I couldn't say I ever been there, but I saw some of his meetings. I was there, you know. I don't know.
I'm writing a book about Ben Johnson. You see, he went to Marietta College briefly back in the 80s, and he left some money to the school, and they built a field house, which is named after him.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knows who he was anymore. So I'm trying to restore his memory to the modern generation. And so I'm writing this book, and I'm trying to find people who may have known him, could tell me a little bit about him, some of the personal side, you know.
He didn't get too well acquainted as in the league, you know.
Unless you didn't behave very well and you went into his office and then you got to know him.
I don't think I ever did that.
During 1918, the war year, so many of the players went into the shipyards and the steel mills. Remember that?
Well, there was a few. The Sox kept a pretty good ball club. I had to go up there and pitch, I think it was about four or five games or something like that. And I went right on up there.
Did you pitch while you were in the Navy? You got a weekend off?
Well, yeah, we pitched not too well.
I mean, with the White Sox. Could you pitch while you're in the Navy and get a weekend pass?
No, you couldn't.
Do that. I see. I think Bob Shockey said that he did that for a while. He was in the Navy over in Philadelphia, I guess, and he could get a weekend pass. He'd go and pitch for the Yankees.
I never did. And I wasn't too far away either, you know.
He could have used you, I'm sure, that year. But I understood that Comiskey was pretty unhappy with some of the guys who went into the shipyards to avoid going into the Army or Navy.
I don't know. Didn't too many of them go.
Jackson was one particularly.
Who?
Joe Jackson. He went to shipyards and...
I don't remember if he did or not. Mm-hmm. I know they didn't have too much of a ball club anymore after.
In 18?
Yeah.
After they went in there. Mm-hmm. That was a, you had a sore arm in 1919, huh? You didn't get to pitch, that was the year they won the pennant again. You had an 11-9 record.
Yeah,
that's why.
Oh, is that right?
He got the flu in the Navy.
Won't you come over?
Get no, I can hear here. But,
well, pick you up better than a mic, maybe. If you're...
Oh, are you, is that on?
Yeah. Oh, come on, I didn't mean to push you up there.
But that's why, because he got the flu, you know, everybody had the flu.
Yeah.
And was dying, so.
I remember.
That's why he'd been pitching. He'd lost so much weight.
I see, What about that 1919 team? Can you talk much about it, or you care to talk about it, or?
Well, we had a good ball club in 19, I think, didn't we?
Yeah, you sure did. That was the team that you won the pennant, you know.
I even forget who the players were then. Of course, I had a book there.
Reesburg and Weaver and...
Yeah.
And that crowd, Jackson and Felsch.
Yeah, Felsch was a good ball player.
Did you get any feeling about trouble on the team that year, you know?
I don't think so. They had never very much trouble on the Sox team. They all went along pretty good.
What did they have this, what did they want to throw these games for then?
I forget when that was.
That was that year, you know, 1919. That's what I'm trying to get at here. I didn't want to get you into it if you didn't want to talk about it.
Well,
you know?
I didn't know a whole lot about the damn thing.
Oh, is that right? you were away from the team, is that it?
No, I was there. I pitched. Uh-huh. I don't know. I didn't pitch very much.
Yeah, you were in 25 games then. Won 11, lost 9. But I just wonder if you... When you're with them, you know, if you kind of sense this, any of these guys, you know, getting together and talking about salaries and getting together with gamblers and so on.
Bill Gleason was the manager.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I liked him. He was a great guy.
Mm-hmm. Did you, what about when they kicked all those guys off the team? What did that do to the morale of the club in 20? And right near the end of the season there, you get all these guys.
Yeah,
cost you the pennant, really, didn't it, in 1920 there?
I think it did. I'm not very sure about things happening.
The last week of the season, I think you're in first place.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then they got all lost the players. And
I know Sykot, he dropped a ball, you know, a nice big bouncer towards the line, and tried to take it with one hand, you know, shot. It was an easy put out. Of course, he dropped it, and it's a run scored. But he didn't look too bad, I'll tell you. He made a few little mistakes like
that.
Did
you suspect anything then when he was doing this, or did it seem just like?
I can't give him hell. You know, you can't help it.
Yeah.
You know, a player makes a bum play, and no reason for it at all, or you can't help but jump on him a little.
Yeah.
Well, Sykot is a great pitcher. They try to catch that ball right there in front of him, you know. Kind of hit towards the third baseline. He went over that one hand, and of course he dropped it.
Yeah. I guess it's Weaver's ball. Weaver's
ball.
Oh,
no.
Oh,
no. No, that's a pitcher's ball.
But he just didn't play it right.
Well, he didn't try very hard to get it. All these things happen, you know. And so long ago that you can't lose it.
Yeah. What kind of a chap was Gandel? Did you know him very well?
Yeah, I knew him pretty well. He was quite a ball player. Mm-hmm.
How was he as a personal, on the personal side? Was it pretty friendly, or?
Well, just like the rest of them.
They always seem to think he was the ringleader of this.
Well, he was in there. I was surprised Weaver being there.
A pretty nice chap, Weaver.
Yeah.
I guess he didn't get any money, did he? He just sat in one of the meetings. And that seemed to be enough.
Oh, he got some money.
He got some money, did he?
Yeah. I think he got $10,000 a piece or something like that. Which was a lot of money.
Yeah.
But of course, they made that up in their debts.
Yeah. You think the kicking them out of baseball was too severe? Or how'd you feel?
Well, I don't know. And then I might be kicked about it.
Yeah.
They knew they had it coming.
Well, Weaver, I guess, tried to get back in, and Jackson, but.
I don't think they tried.
Joe Jackson, quite a ball player, huh?
Yeah, he's a good hitter. And pretty good arm.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't a bad outfielder. He hit him pretty good.
Is he a pretty nice chap, Joe Jackson? Or
he was never really friendly, you know. He kind of a hold-off guy.
Yeah. How is this Claude Williams? That was a pretty good pitcher.
He was a good pitcher, yeah. I think he was in on that.
Yeah, he got kicked out, too. He lost a couple of games in the series. Well, that was a great ball club.
Oh, yeah, that was a good ball club.
Although after they broke it up, you had a couple of good years. The team wasn't much good, but you did all right in the early 20s.
Yeah.
You had a couple of 20-game seasons there. And 1921, the year after they got rid of those guys, you won 25 games. So it didn't bother you much.
No.
Throwing the spitball, did that, you think, is that easy on the arm or hard on the arm?
Just the same as any other ball.
Is that right?
You see, you take a ball and you wet these two fingers here.
First two fingers.
And instead of them holding on the ball, so the ball would be spinning, the ball would go up there, barely
slips
turn
right
it over, and it would, when it hit up there, it would break. Most of them did. Sometimes they didn't work.
Did you throw it very hard?
Oh, yeah, I threw it as hard as any ball.
But you had such a long career. That had nothing to do with saving your arm at all?
No.
You know, you just had a good, tough arm, huh?
A lot of them say throwing a spitball ruined your arm. But I never felt that.
All the fellows that threw it had long careers.
Yeah.
So I guess it couldn't have, like Burley Grimes. What other pitches did you use most?
Oh, gosh.
Curve.
Look at the book.
How did you feel about them outlawing the spitball? I mean, do you think that was a good decision
or it
was fair? I mean,
sure. And there for a long while, you know, they did not allow any new spitball pitchers in.
Yeah.
It was too hard to hit.
Why'd they let you fellas stay on doing it, I wonder?
Huh?
Why'd they let you fellas keep throwing them?
Well, those were spitball pitchers, why they could go ahead and use it.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't very many of them.
Uh-huh. Maybe that's why, because there weren't too many.
Only no new ones there to take it.
Uh-huh. Legally.
Yeah. Well, they didn't very often use them. You could tell it, you know.
You think they pitch it today? Any of these kids today throw it?
Oh, I don't think so.
Uh-huh.
They might, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever have any sore arm?
Well, yes, it's pretty sore sometimes.
What from?
From throwing.
Mm-hmm.
You had cartilage taken out of your arm.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. I had an operation.
When was that, I wonder?
Oh, you forget.
Long time ago, huh?
Yeah.
Well, didn't you had a 1927, you only pitched in a few games. Maybe that was it.
No, it was early because he came back and pitched real good after that.
Uh-huh.
In the early years.
Oh, I see, uh-huh. Well, that could have been a pretty serious operation, couldn't it?
Yeah. Well, gee, my arm felt good after that.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, I had to wait till it settled up, you know. I didn't think that I'd ever be able to pitch anymore.
Uh-huh.
You know, I fell down there.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, I think there's a cutting through there somewhere.
Right by your right elbow, huh?
Yeah. And took it out.
Yeah. I would think they would might very well have hurt your throwing there, but
it's
been a good operation.
It wasn't too long, you know, when I pitched that senior year.
Mm-hmm. Is there some specialist did that in Chicago?
Yeah, we didn't know who the
doctor. Dr. Cruiser, the White Sox guy.
Oh,
I think it was Cruiser, didn't
mm-hmm.
it? Yeah, they had good doctors in those days, you know. They didn't hesitate about doing anything, you know. They saw that was necessary, so
yeah.
Went ahead and took it out.
Yeah.
Bone.
Did you ever hear of Bone Setter Reese?
Yeah.
He fixed a lot of arms, I guess.
Yeah, he did. I think I saw him where I went to him once.
Yeah. He's over in Youngstown.
Yeah, I got along ago. Can't just I'm pretty sure I went to him one time.
You had your knee operated on once for cartilage. Was he the one
No, I think it was his mom.
Well, you have your knee, too, that has cartilage out of it.
Yeah, that scar is still there. That is a bad one. Must have cartilage in there, and you had to take that out. And that was quite a while pitching before I was able to go in there.
Mm-hmm.
I forget now which year that was.
Well, you had pretty good control, I guess, huh?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad.
You always struck out more than you walked, and you never walked too many here, but more strikeouts. How about some of these hitters you faced? Who were some of the tough ones there?
Well,
how'd you pitch Ty Cobb?
Well, I didn't have too much trouble with him.
Uh-huh.
I think I was about as good as anybody that pitched to him.
Uh-huh.
I struck him out quite a few times.
Did he hit your spitter much?
Oh, yeah, I threw him a lot of spitters.
Uh-huh.
I threw a spitter some sidearm, overhand. You know, I throw it any way I was thrown.
Uh-huh.
And like a sidearm spitter, I'd throw it to a left-hander and come in and hit his hand, putting it. It's good. Go up there, all of a sudden, it's sharp base on it.
Mm-hmm.
I had fun swinging that ball, and by gosh, I bet you I missed him that far.
About 2 feet. Yeah. How would you pitch Cobb, any particular way?
Oh, I used to mix him up.
Yes. How about Ruth, the babe?
Well, he was tough, too. Not too tough, though, for me. I don't know. I seem to have pretty good stuff on me.
Keep it low and away, huh?
Well, I throw it over the plate, but I was breaking down on him, you know.
Yeah.
He hit a lot on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How about some of the, who are some of the good right-handed hitters you pitched against?
Oh, gee, I don't even remember. I'll tell you.
Harry Heilman, was he right or he hit left?
Yeah, he hit right-handed. He's a pretty good hitter.
Yeah. Thinking of George Sisler, but I guess he's a left-handed hitter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a great hitter.
Well, how'd you get along with the umpires?
Oh, I never had too much trouble.
You ever get thrown out of a game?
No, I don't believe I did.
Is that right? That's quite an achievement. Not many players could go around as long as you were could.
I don't think they're thrown away off.
Did you have any favorite umpires, or did you like them all? Or how about Billy Evans?
Yeah, he was a pretty good umpire. And I never thought I would have said what his name was. I thought he was a good umpire. Oh, shot him. Names all disappear
on me. Yeah. Do you think the umpires really do a pretty good, fair job overall?
Yes, they do.
Tough job, but
yeah, some of them were no good at all.
Oh,
but most of them,
they got rid of them, I guess. Huh?
Oh yeah, after you pitched to them, I got it. You know, you can tell which way they're going to call.
You ever remember an Ollie Chill?
Who?
Ollie Chill.
Chill, he's an umpire.
Yeah, right? Do you remember him very much?
Yeah.
I guess he wasn't too good.
He wasn't too bad.
He got fired by Ben Johnson, so I figured he may have been not the greatest.
Well, I guess he had charge of all of them.
How about Tommy Connolly? Remember him at all? Tommy Connolly?
Oh, yeah.
He was an old umpire there. He was a pretty good one, I guess. Well, where'd you live in Chicago when you were with the White Sox? Did you have a home here? Or did you just rent a place? Or?
I was in rooms, you know. I guess I wasn't married. Sometimes, yeah.
The Sutherland Hotel.
Sutherland Hotel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's where the ball players stayed, was it?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Quite a few of them.
Not very far from the ballpark? Or?
No. Uh-huh. It was
43rd and Drexel, maybe?
Huh?
43rd and Drexel, maybe?
I think it was 47th.
Well, maybe
47th.
The ballpark's at 35th, is that right? Yeah.
No, 35.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what'd you do in the off season? A lot of hunting? Fishing?
Oh, I did a lot of hunting, yeah.
You're a great hunter, huh?
Still got my guns up there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They're inside there. Yeah. I think the lad has got one of the guns.
Where'd you go hunting?
Oh, out in the woods or any place.
I mean around here or out in Iowa or back home?
Oh, out in Iowa, yeah, I used to go a lot of hunting. Mm-hmm. But then when I moved into Chicago, I had a lot of places to hunt too.
Any your fellow players you go hunting with? Who are some of your...
Well, no, they weren't around in the wintertime. Mm-hmm.
Ray Shock hunt much?
He
ran a bowling alley, huh?
Yeah.
That's what he did. Did you ever get a job in the off season, or did you just hunt and take it easy?
I don't believe I ever got a job. Uh-huh. Oh, once in a while, I guess I did.
Uh-huh. How about after you retired? What'd you do? I got a story here about when you retired. In, I guess 33 was your last season, wasn't it? 1933.
Yeah.
So I wondered what you did then.
Yeah, I don't know.
He had a bowling alley in Graves Lake.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
That's right, he had a bowling alley. Mm-hmm.
How long did you have that?
Oh, I forget now. A few years.
You were 46, and then he went to coaching.
Oh, I see. Where'd you coach?
For the White Sox for 3 years. Uh-huh. 46, 7, and 8.
I see.
Yeah, I kind of forget them years.
Uh-huh.
When Teddy Lines was manager.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Teddy, I guess he's dead, baby.
No.
I don't think so. Man.
No.
Oh, I thought.
Mm-hmm. We had a Christmas card this year.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember Clyde Krause?
Yeah, he's a catcher.
Yeah. I talked to him last year or so. He lives out in Muncie, Indiana. Had a real nice evening with him. He's in good shape and had a lot of good stories to tell. He succeeded Ray Shock, I guess.
Huh?
He came after Ray Shock as the...
Yeah, well, I think he was there when Ray was still there.
Yeah, backup catcher, and then I guess he became the first string catcher. Did you know Dickie Kerr very well?
Yeah.
Pretty good pitcher, huh?
Yeah.
He got in trouble, though, I guess. He didn't sign his contract 1 year, and they let him go. I guess he was barred for a while because he held out.
Yeah, Dickie was quite a good little pitcher.
What's some of the, what's your biggest thrill in baseball? Have anything stand out?
I don't know, probably a lot of things do. Sit down and think.
Okay.
I know there was one game in Chicago when the man reached first base me until there was two out in the ninth. And my gosh, he could have called him out. But he called him safe.
Is that right? That is a one hitter?
Yeah.
It would have been a no hitter?
Yeah. It would have been no man reached.
Perfect game, is that right? And it wound up to be, was that the only guy that got on that one?
Yeah. Next guy was hit down to second base. That's where the fellow got the hit. They called him safe. And Clem was the umpire.
Well, wasn't he in the National League?
No. I don't know. He might have been some before. Yeah. But he was there, Chicago. I kicked like the devil, too, on that. Oh, I thought I had him. He hit Eddie Collins was playing second base. And my gosh, I thought he was out. Huh. That'd been no man reached first base.
Wouldn't that be something? Yeah.
I tell you, very few of them. I had one like that in the three-I league.
Oh? A perfect game?
Yeah.
Is that right?
There's an old card up there.
Oh, yeah.
That was 1910,
the Davenport, Iowa.
Yeah, it was played in Dubuque.
That's not bad. Yeah.
That was my boy there.
I see. Does he like baseball?
Well, he was playing pretty good, and he broke his neck in a swimming pool. And he was swimming out here in the ocean here. And he got that pitch up. He's working now all the time. But his leg, you know, kind of gave out. And
did he pitch professionally?
Oh, no, he wasn't old enough.
I see.
He was only 16 when he...
14.
Huh?
He was 14.
14?
In the Pony League.
He gets around all right now.
Mm-hmm. He's still pretty crippled up, though, yet.
I see. How old is he?
He's 27.
I see. That's a, well, that's a awfully dangerous injury, isn't it?
Well, they didn't think he'd live at all, and then, because he was paralyzed from the neck down for 8 months.
Yeah.
And, but then he, his hip is all twisted in the foot, you know, and his hands don't open all the way. But it's just a miracle, you know, because most of them with a broken neck are paralyzed, never live, or else they said he'd be a quadriplegic the rest of his life, but he can't do that.
Mm-hmm. Where's he working? He's just
he's at Photo World downtown.
Oh, yeah. He's a photographer. All that stuff. He likes that, though.
Yeah, that's good business, certainly. Do you have many old pictures?
Huh?
Do you have many old pictures?
Yeah, there's four of them, too.
Well, there's some, I don't know, there's a little scrapbook in the attic.
No, there's some pretty big pictures right back
there. Oh, back here, there.
Yeah, would I be able to look at some of them, maybe?
But,
I've got a camera here to take pictures of pictures. Well, do you remember any really funny plays or crazy things happening in the ball field?
Oh, I guess I do, but gee whiz, they're forgotten.
There's so many things happen in a ball game. Something new and different almost every time.
Yeah.
How'd you like traveling?
Oh, I didn't mind it too much.
Long train trips. And
No, I did a lot of traveling, all right. I made a trip around the world with the Sox and or the Giants and the Sox.
Yeah.
McGraw was managing the Giants and the
Callahan?
Huh?
Jimmy Callahan? He had the White Sox?
I don't know.
I think maybe Callahan was in through there one of those years.
I don't know. Then later on, made a trip to London.
Oh?
And
a baseball trip?
Yeah.
Oh.
We played the Giants on the trip around the world.
Mm-hmm. That's quite a thrill, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And those foreign people like baseball?
Well, they seem to. I think they quite a few of them got it now. Like, I think there's quite a few ball players. Even London even had some pretty fair ball players. But of course, football is a game for the. Keep track of all that, but I had some books, you know, with quite a few of the players in.
Yeah, I'd like to see those. If you could. You might have got a little camera here which takes pictures of those pictures, you see, so I can get a copy. Well, it was a great life, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You really enjoyed the game?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Of course, I get pretty mad sometimes and get beat.
Well, if you never got put out of a game, though, you must have controlled your temper pretty well.
No, I never got out of a ball game. That is by the ump. It's taking out a lot of time to go into pitching, you know.
Did Kid Gleason take you out of the box much?
No, Kid was a wonderful fellow.
He would let you really tell him when you should be taken out, or?
I didn't very often do that. I'd stay in the hand as long as I was able to. But they know about it pretty well. And they're going bad.
Where did you go in spring training?
Oh, we went to all the lot of
Florida.
Well, yeah, we went in Florida a couple of times, and anyway, down in Texas, we played down there in the spring at some time. Gee, I almost forget them all.
Did you think spring training was necessary as long as?
Oh, yeah, so you had to get in shape.
Uh-huh. Take you very long to get in shape in the spring? You probably kept in pretty good shape, anyhow.
I was in pretty good shape to start with, but you got to be careful of your arm. You can hurt.
There aren't.
You lived in this house is one thing. Mm-hmm. How long have you lived in this house?
20 years.
Nice. Was it a pretty well built up neighborhood then? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Was.
Is it on now?
Yeah. Mm. It's a very nice neighborhood here.
It was beautiful. The section is called Beverly, and at that time there were a lot of trees and older families. And since we moved in, almost every home in the block has turned over about 5 times.
But did you own a home in Chicago before you moved here?
No, we had one in Twin Lakes, Wisconsin before this. And before that, we lived in Fox Lake was the post office, but it was by Pastakee Lake. And Fabe built that in 1934, or when he retired.
You are a second Mrs. Faber?
Yes.
I see. And first Mrs. Faber is deceased?
Yes.
When was that? Did you?
I don't know exactly, probably in the early 40s.
Was she a great baseball fan, your first wife?
I don't know.
I imagine she was. She went to probably all the games. I never knew her because I met Fabe after she died, so...
You grew up where? In Chicago?
In Chicago.
And you went to the University of Illinois first and then the University of Nebraska.
Yes.
Who were you talking about before?
Irene, your first wife.
Oh. Yeah.
So you go out to the old ballpark very often?
Where the old park used to be.
Wait, did your wife go to the games when you...
No, she went to the other games.
She did go to the game.
This park was built in.
Yeah, well, I meant she went to the ball game when you were playing. Did you like to see a pitch?
Oh, yeah.
So you get nervous up there in the grandstand?
Oh, no.
So many of them do. They, I think Jess Haynes' wife saw him pitch his no-hitter. And she was awfully nervous.
But, I went to every practice, practically, and every game at the Sox Park after we were married when Faye was coaching.
How did you meet?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but I'll shorten it. Yeah. A girl that I went to a boarding school with, her parents had a home next door to Faye's, and of course then they lived there for many years, and I think I met him in 1943.
Mm-hmm. You got married in
1947.
And that's when he was coaching with the White Sox.
Right.
So you were out the ballpark there. And that was when Ted Lyons was manager?
Yes.
Did you know Jack Onslow? Did he manage him through there at all?
Not those 3 years,
no. Jack Onslow. Was that later, I guess, maybe?
I don't really know.
I think he was later sometime.
Yeah,
because
maybe about 50. Yeah.
Ted was manager the 46, 7,
oh,
and 8
yeah.
when you were there. And...
You say he went hunting out in Oregon quite a bit? To some old friend that he went out there with?
And he died.
It was in Pendleton, Oregon
that
he went. I always remember from the robes he wears.
Robes?
Well, I always get him Pendleton robes.
Oh, I see.
But it was an old school chum from Dubuque or someplace.
Well, did he still do much hunting after you knew him?
Not too much. One year you went to someplace way up in Wisconsin and got a deer.
Was Mr. Faber in the Hall of Fame when you met him? Had he been in?
No, he went in 64.
Now, how did you first hear about your election to the Hall of Fame?
I don't know.
What were you doing? Playing golf?
No.
Seems like everybody's out playing golf.
They called at home on a Sunday morning.
Who called? Is it the commissioner?
I don't know who he was now.
Mr. Frick? Or?
I don't remember.
Maybe some newspaper man who had the news.
It might have been Brown.
No.
From the
Warren Brown.
Warren Brown. I didn't hear the conversation, and I guess I was too excited to ask who it was.
I bet he was excited.
Oh, yeah.
Probably he didn't. He doesn't seem like he gets excited over much of anything,
no.
So I wonder if this would be very different.
But then all the newspaper men and photographers and friends came that afternoon, a lot of telephone calls.
And were you up there for the induction?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's been a big thrill.
Yes, it certainly was. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, have you heard any stories that he's told you about interesting games or plays or exciting incidents?
No, it's just when he almost had the perfect game.
You ever talk much about the 1919 scandal at all?
No. Mm-hmm. The only time it ever comes up is when someone comes, you know, and then they ask all the questions. Yeah. But I guess there isn't anything
I didn't know he had game there in the Duke.
Mm-hmm. Perfect game, that one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What is this big diagram?
Well, that's the perfect game, and there's a silver dollar on the, set on a baseball diamond, and there's a silver dollar for every man that didn't reach first base. So there are 27 silver dollars.
Go on describing it, then I'll take a picture so I know what I'm looking at when I...
Yeah, those dollars.
Well, that's about all to say. Yeah. There's 27 silver dollars, and then the name of the player is alongside of the dollar.
Excuse me. Who put that together?
It was 50 years later to the date, so that must have been 1960, and a fellow named Rybant, I forget his first name, pitched a perfect game in Davenport, I guess. So they had Fabe come Davenport, and the Rybant and Fabe received this baseball diamond with the dollars on. I think he later pitched for the Sox for a little while, this Rybant.
Oh, Dennis Rybant.
Rybant.
I remember that name.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was with the...
But exactly 50 years, you know, then, and that's why they had this reunion.
Mm-hmm. Could I get a picture of you two together? Would you mind? Maybe you can sit in the armchair.
Very good.
Oh.
It didn't go. The more trouble these flash cubes, they drive me crazy.
Oh, you should have one of those.
I didn't get you yet, so don't.
Other things, you know, that our son has one and put it, you know.
Yeah. Let me try another flash cube.
Because the flash cubes never seem to work for us either. Oh, you're not using your good camera.
No, that's just for those close ups. You see, you can't get close ups with this one. You can only get. So far, you have to be 3 feet away, I think. Oh, boy. This may not work this time. I think it will. So. There,
that worked.
It sure is.
Well, you should never look into
the
flash bulb. You see a little mark for a while.
So, yeah, well, that's are there any other mementos around here that you could describe?
Well, the photo on the right is when the team. Went to Europe, I believe, in 1924, and the first, like King George and Edward, and then Elizabeth's father, King George, is on there.
longer.
And this, that's when Babe went into the Hall of Fame, and the All-Star team in 54. Oh, this is when he was in Dubuque. The Dubuque Tigers in 1910. Mm-hmm.
In my office at school, and he came in and said, I got baseball pictures all over my office, and it's crazy.
Well, that isn't a very good one, it's a print.
Yeah, it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
Here, let me take a picture of this one here now. I can pick this up and go, all right. I'm only getting closer to 3 feet, though. Wow, this has been wonderful.
Oh, did you take a picture of this?
Yeah.
Our son took that when he
oh,
was
that's great, yeah.
going to photography school. Mm-hmm. I think it's excellent. So.
Yeah, he is with a photo establishment in town or with a newspaper? Or
no, he's with downtown with Photo World, and that's cameras, and then he does photography on the side.
Mm-hmm. Where, does he live nearby? Or?
He lives in Wheaton, Illinois.
Yeah. I was very intrigued by that clock over there. The
that was a gift on a homecoming day in 1965.
Uh-huh. That's quite an idea, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we don't keep a lot of things out, you know.
Do you look through the record books much? I see you have a number of record books around here.
Yeah, oh, once in a while there's something we want to see. Yeah.
I use them all the time. I'm always looking up somebody.
Yeah.
Just like you didn't know who Wolfgang was.
I've got a copy of that one right with me in the motel, the green one, the big encyclopedia.
Uh-huh.
That's a great one.
We have every one of the official baseball by Turk or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I like that.
I don't have all of those. I think I have the 53 edition.
I like the first one that they put out the best.
This other one has kind of put those out of business. I read some writer was out here talking to you a couple months ago. I read in some paper. And a nice little interview there. So.
Mm-hmm. Every once in a while somebody wants to laugh.
Do you get many requests for autographs still?
Oh, yeah. They don't even write good with this hand anymore. It's kind of, I don't know what the heck. I fell down and I hurt. I think I broke that big toe. And I got a bruise in there. I was out there on the porch. I was going to get the mail, and I reached down. There was some mail wouldn't go in the box. It threw it on the floor. And gosh dang, I fell down there. I thought I couldn't even back in. So I quit going out there.
Do you get to travel much anymore, or you stay pretty close to home?
No.
Babe hasn't been out of the house for 5 years. So.
Oh, I see.
Or dressed. It's too much of an effort to, you know, he puffs too much, and it's too much of an effort to get dressed anymore.
Yeah, my legs are no good anymore.
Do you like to watch baseball on television?
Oh, yeah, I watch it all the time.
Do you read the sporting news much anymore?
Yeah,
it comes every week.
I just wondered if some old players have lost interest in the game and some haven't. I'm just curious to know.
Oh, Fabe has a TV with one going and the radio with the other. And
that's wonderful, man. I do the same thing. I just can't get enough baseball, although I think they're kind of overpaid today, don't you think so?
Yeah, good guess. The biggest salary I ever got was $10,000.
Yeah.
And I was winning 20 games a year.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they get $200,000 now for...
Yeah, my gosh.
I can't sympathize with this. Did you ever get any kind of a pension from baseball?
I don't know. Yeah.
You get a pension now. It isn't what the players get when they retire.
What was this from? Is this some old pension fund? I didn't know the older players had any pension.
They had pension fund years ago, and then didn't they put everything into... they gave it away or something.
Every month I get a check now.
Yeah, but I mean the first one, they when you first start playing, somewhere along the line they had a pension. I heard once who it was given to, but I forgot.
I didn't think anybody got anything. Seems to me the younger players are the, when they set up this current pension plan, why they didn't include older players in it, I never could figure out. All the selfish attitudes. The people who built the game up, you know, were almost cut out of that plan.
Well, I guess there aren't too many of them alive.
Max Carey didn't get anything, I know, in Florida.
Who?
Max Carey. He's in poverty down in Florida, I guess. He never got much anything. Roger Peckinpah never gets anything. I see Peckinpah in Cleveland. He's, I've talked to him a couple of times. He's doing very well, although he's slowing up a little bit. He goes to Florida still, I think, with his brother.
Well, we were invited to Bradenton the end of this month, and then also Governor Askew has the... a banquet. I think it's their 30th.
They have a Hall of Fame, don't they, down there?
Banquet? I don't know, but it's their 30th baseball banquet. I presume the Chamber of Commerce, that's where the letter comes from. But of course, I was invited this year too, which I've never been before, but now he couldn't even travel with me. Mm-hmm. Because the barber comes here, and he hasn't been out of the house for 5 years.
That's a lovely house.
That long.
Yes, it is. That, maybe it doesn't seem that long to you, but...
as long as you can see the ball games there, that's a big help.
Oh, yeah. There are some games played today, I think.
No. No, what
basketball.
You probably read was that they were going to... start spring training.
They are definitely. Tomorrow, I think the commissioner, I guess, the rumor is you're going to open the camps by himself, you know, by his own authority.
I didn't get a chance to read the paper today.
If they don't open today or tomorrow, they can't open the season, they figure.
Well, they figured they have to have 3 weeks.
Yeah, this would be it.
So I think he said that it was going to start on time. Was it the 8th is opening day?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
they'll have to get I generally watch all the ball games that are on here.
Do the Cubs televise all their games?
Huh?
Do the Cubs televise all their games?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You got baseball every day then almost, huh?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, some now so many of the Sox games are at night, and by that time, Babe is in bed and asleep when they start, so...
Of course, the Cub games are all daytime when they're home.
But then, you see, he doesn't get to see the Sox all the
except
time
on
because
weekends.
They're at night.
Yeah.
So. Oh, they have a few day games.
Yeah. That's a great old ballpark down there.
Yeah.
So, one of the few of the old ones that are left.
Oh, gosh, I wonder what they're doing with you want to take a lot of things out of the park there.
Oh, they took up the turf. I wish I had gotten down there because...
You know what?
When they're taking up the artificial turf or
whatever
you call it. And anybody could come in and take a piece of it. and I would have liked to have gone down, because then when you practice golf, you know, in the backyard, you could hit on that instead of tearing up all the sod.
You play golf, do you?
A little bit.
I saw some clubs there. I wonder.
Well, I took lessons in February, and I've been playing off and on for 52 years, but I never knew how to hold a club.
Yeah.